The following program is not a production of Audio Journal. External programs like this are selected with the interests of our audience in mind and with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed in this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
Hello, everyone. My name is Sarah from the Talking Information Center. Today is June 1st, 2026, and I'll be reading selections from Diabetes Self-Management. Our first selection, Start Your Day Right, Creating a Morning Routine That Works for You, by Laurel Durking, MedNASM 700 ERYT. Every morning we follow a routine, consciously or unconsciously, to get going for the day. Many of these tasks may feel non-negotiable, brushing teeth, making coffee, getting dressed, but other elements of your morning practice can either give you a genuine feel-good boost or quietly drain your time and energy. You may even think of it as a routine, but if you reflect on your mornings, you'll likely notice repeating behaviors. Do you roll over and check your phone within seconds of waking up? Press snooze once or multiple times? Trudge straight to the coffee pot. Take 90 seconds to reflect on your typical morning and ask yourself, what part of my morning makes me feel good, confident, prepared, or mentally clear? How am I preparing my body physically? One underrated life hack is identifying the habits that truly support you and practicing them every single day. You may feel like there's no time to add anything else, but chances are some of your current habits aren't adding value. Swapping even one for something more nourishing, say a breath-based stretch instead of checking your email, can shift the tone of your entire day. Audit your morning routine. Here's one way to start. Write down everything you typically do in the morning. Then divide those items into two columns, necessary and unnecessary, or perhaps feels good and doesn't feel good. Once you've sorted your habits, ask, how many of these support me physically or mentally, and which could I let go of? Letting go of even one low-value habit can free up space for something more grounding or joyful. Adding movement to your morning. If your current routine includes no physical preparation, for example, you skip breakfast, get dressed, and head straight out the door, consider swapping one habit like a quick email scroll for just 90 seconds to 5 minutes of movement instead. Set the tone for your day. No matter how small the habit, what you choose to do first thing in the morning can shape how you show up for the rest of the day. By making space for movement, mindfulness, or simply letting go of what no longer serves you, you're giving yourself the best possible foundation. One breath, one stretch, one choice at a time. Here are a few seated stretches you can try before getting out of bed. Seated wide forward fold, wide seated twist, seated hamstring stretch, and figure four stretch. Bonus, trigger point for footwork. For a grounding bonus, keep a tennis, lacrosse, or golf ball near your bed. Stand up straight and place that ball under one foot. Hold a wall for balance if needed. Roll the ball lengthwise under your foot for 60 to 90 seconds, applying modest pressure. Repeat on the other side. If you have any foot complications, including neuropathy, nerve damage, wounds, or changes in foot shape, consult your diabetes care team before doing this exercises. This is more explanation on the stretches. Seated morning stretches. Seated wide foot fold. Sit on the edge of your bed, spread your feet wide, and gently hinge forward at the hips, bringing your hands to the floor or your shins, thighs, or a pillow on your lap. Keep your head in line with your spine rather than letting it hang. Breathe deeply into your upper back. If you have any eye complications like diabetic retinopathy, avoid letting your head drop below your heart. Stay lifted and supported as needed. The seated, wide seated twist. Place one hand on the floor or frame between your legs. Reach the other arm up behind you and gently twist. Avoid forcing the movement. Hold for 3 to 5 slow breaths through the nose. Repeat on the other side. Seated hamstring stretch. Sit tall, extend one leg straight, and curl your toes back towards you. Maintain a micro bend in the knee to protect your joints. Reach your chest forward toward your toes and breathe for 3 to 5 slow breaths. Repeat on the other side. Figure 4 stretch. Sit tall and cross one ankle over the opposite knee. Place your hands on your shins and gently lean forward with your chest. Hold for 3 to 5 breaths. Repeat on the other side. If you have knee issues, keep the lifted foot flexed and avoid leaning deeply. Living with type 1 diabetes, T1D, means that staying active requires a bit more planning and know-how. Exercise impacts your blood sugar, your blood glucose, sugar, levels in different ways depending on the type, timing, and intensity of your workout. And that's before factoring in your insulin regimen and what's already in your system. The good news, with the right approach, you can exercise safely and effectively. Understanding how your body responds to physical activity is the first step towards making it a regular and rewarding part of your routine. How much exercise do you really need? Regular exercise can have a powerful effect on your diabetes management. Staying active helps improve insulin sensitivity, supports weight control, and makes it easier to keep your blood sugar in range. The key, consistency. The more regularity you move your body, the more benefits you're likely to see. According to the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, adults should aim for at least 150 minutes of moderate intensity aerobic activity, like brisk walking, each week. That's just 20 to 25 minutes a day, plus 2 or more days of strength training exercises that target all the major muscle groups. Even short daily workouts can add up to a big difference over time. Here are some tried and true tips for exercising with T1D. Understanding how your body responds to movement. Everybody reacts differently to physical activity, and with T1D, those differences can be especially pronounced. Some types of exercise may cause your blood sugar to drop, while others might lead to a temporary spike. Aerobic exercise, for example running, cycling, or swimming, generally lowers your blood sugar during activity. Anaerobic exercise, for example, weightlifting, sprinting, high-intensity interval training, often causes a spike during the workout, followed by a drop afterward. Mixed exercise. For example, team sports, CrossFit, hiking, can lead to unpredictable glucose fluctuations. Tracking how your blood sugar responds to different types of workout is the best way to learn what works for you. I call this process finding your workout formula. Whenever you start a new workout type or routine, try to reduce the number of variables. Do the same workout at the same time of day. If possible, keep your active insulin on board, IOB, consistent too, though that's optional. Track almost everything. Log your blood sugar before your workout, immediately after, and again 60 to 90 minutes later. Also note the type of workout, food intake, time of day, and IOB. After a week or two, you'll start seeing patterns. You can then adjust your insulin accordingly and begin exploring other types of workouts using the same approach. Check your blood sugars. Check your blood sugar levels before, during, and after exercise. Frequent glucose monitoring is essential when exercising with T1D. Whether you're using a continuous glucose monitor, a CGM, or checking manually with a glucose meter, aim to check at key points throughout your workout. Before exercise, make sure your blood sugar is within a safe range, typically between 90 and around 250, depending on your activity, insulin regimen, and personal targets. If it's on the lower side, have a small snack before getting started. If it's above 250, check for ketones. If moderate or large ketones are present, skip the workout and focus on lowering your blood sugar first. If ketones are negative or only trace amounts, light activity like walking may be okay, as long as you're feeling well. During exercise, If you're doing prolonged or intense activity, check your numbers periodically to check unexpected low or high glucose early. After exercise, keep an eye out for delayed hypoglycemia, low blood sugar, which can occur several hours later due to an increased insulin sensitivity. Make smart insulin and carb adjustments. Because exercise can affect blood sugar levels in different ways, adjusting your insulin and carbohydrate intake is often necessary. Insulin adjustments. If you use an insulin pump, you may be able to temporarily reduce your basal background rate leading up to and during exercise. If you take injections, adjusting your pre-exercise bolus may help reduce the risk of going low. Timing is key, so it's helpful to experiment with the guidance of your healthcare team and track your responses. Carbohydrate strategy. Eating fast-acting carbs like fruit, glucose tabs, or juice before or during a workout can help prevent hypoglycemia. For longer workouts, including some complex carbs ahead of time, such as whole grains, or pairing carbs with protein and healthy fats like nuts, may provide more sustained energy. Personally, I try and avoid eating extra carbs so I can exercise. I prefer to adjust my insulin in advance, but if I need carbs to treat or prevent a low, I always use them. Work with your healthcare provider to find the best approach for your specific needs and activity level. Hydrate well and keep fast-acting carbs handy. Hydration matters. Dehydration can make it harder to keep your blood sugar in the range, so be sure to drink plenty of fluids before, during, and after exercise. Always carry a source of fast-acting carbohydrates like glucose gel or tabs, regular, not sugar-free sports drinks, or dextrose in case of hypoglycemia. Even if you don't expect to need them, it's better to be safe and prepared. Tip: sports drinks with electrolytes and some sugar can be especially helpful for longer or more intense workouts. Just be sure to account for the carbs in your insulin dosing. Recognize the signs of high and low blood sugar. Being able to recognize the signs and symptoms of both hypoglycemia and hyperglycemia, high blood sugar, is essential, especially during exercise. As a general guideline, hypoglycemia is typically defined as a blood sugar level below 70. Hyperglycemia is often considered to be a level above 180, 2 hours after meal, or 250 before exercise, if ketones are present. However, target ranges can differ from person to person. Always check with your healthcare provider to determine what's the right for you. Signs of hypoglycemia may include shakiness, dizziness, sweating, rapid heartbeat, confusion, extreme hunger. Signs of hyperglycemia may include increased thirst, frequent urination, fatigue, headache, nausea. If you're experiencing symptoms of low blood sugar during exercise, stop immediately, check your blood sugar, and treat it with a fast-acting carbohydrate if needed. Never try to push through a low. Your safety comes first. Watch for blood sugar dips after you work out. It's common for blood sugar levels to drop hours after exercise, especially following intense or extended activity. That's because your body remains more insulin-sensitive workout, increasing the risk of delayed hypoglycemia, even overnight. To help prevent lows after you finish exercise, have a balanced post-work meal or snack that includes both protein and carbohydrates. This helps prevent blood sugar dips and replenishes your energy stores. Keep an eye on your glucose overnight, especially after evening workouts, using a CGM if available. Talk to your healthcare provider about whether you need to adjust your insulin doses after exercising. Everybody's body is different, so it may take some trial and error to find out what works best for you. Choose the right type and timing of exercise. The timing of your workout can play a big role in blood sugar management. Some people find that exercising after meals helps stabilize glucose levels, while others prefer to work out first thing in the morning before eating. Try different times a day to see what works best for your body. When it comes to exercise type, start with what feels manageable. If you're new to working out, begin with moderate intensity activities like brisk walking, gentle cycling, or yoga before building up to more intense routines. You might also feel safer exercising indoors at first, such as on a treadmill, where the environment is more controlled, and it's easy to stop if your blood sugar starts to dip. Do both resistance training and cardio for long-term benefits. When we think about exercise, we often default to cardio workouts, the kind that get your heart rate up, work up a sweat, and burn calories in the moment. But resistance training may be even more valuable, especially for people with T1D. That's because building muscle through resistance training can increase your insulin sensitivity over time, making it easier to manage blood sugar levels and maintain a healthy weight. For this reason, a mix of cardio and resistance training is ideal. Aim for resistant workouts 2 to 3 non-consecutive days per week, focusing on large muscle groups. Think full body movements like squats or rows, rather than smaller isolation exercises like bicep curls. These workouts can have a major impact on your diabetes management, and the best part, you don't have to join a gym to get started. Body weight exercises, resistant bands, or free online workouts can be incredibly effective, and you can do them from the comfort of your home. Choose an exercise routine you enjoy. Consistency is key to maintaining an active lifestyle, and enjoyment plays a big role in making that happen. You might not love the idea of exercise at first, but it can become far more enjoyable when you choose activities you genuinely like. That might mean dancing, hiking, swimming, or playing a favorite sport. You don't have to go do it alone either. Exercising with friends, taking a fitness class, or working with a personal trainer can provide extra motivation and accountability. Most importantly, choose something sustainable. It's far better to stick with a simple routine you enjoy than to create an overly ambitious plan that fizzles out after a few weeks. Strong, safe, and informed. Exercising with T1D requires a balance of planning, monitoring, and flexibility, but it doesn't have to feel intimidating. In fact, with the right mindset and tools, it can not only be manageable, but genuinely enjoyable. By understanding how your body responds to different types of movement, making thoughtful adjustments to insulin and food, and staying prepared, you can safely stay active while keeping your blood sugar in range. With the right strategies in place, physical activity becomes a powerful tool for supporting your overall health, energy, and well-being with T1D. Keep moving, stay safe, and embrace the benefits of an active lifestyle. Crystal Oram, MS, is the founder of DiabetesStrong.com. She has lived with type 1 diabetes since 1997 and is passionate about helping others with diabetes live active and healthy lives. Understanding your diabetes medication options, what each class does, and how to treat decisions are made today. By Alex Nguyen, PharmMD, RPH. Many medication options are available to help manage diabetes. Because blood glucose regulation is complex and varies from person to person, reflecting differences in insulin resistance, insulin production, or liver glucose regulation, treatment plans are individualized. Oral medications for type 2 diabetes. Oral medications are commonly used in type 2 diabetes and often part of early treatment, although injectables may also be introduced when needed. Each class of oral medication works in a different way, targeting insulin resistance, insulin production, glucose absorption, or glucose release from the liver. Metformin by Guanidines. Metformin, a member of the biguanidine family, is typically the preferred first medication used to treat type 2 diabetes. It has a strong track record for safety, effectiveness, and affordability. Metformin works primarily by reducing the amount of glucose released from the liver and improving the body's sensitivity to insulin. Importantly, it does not stimulate the pancreas to produce additional insulin, which means the risk of low blood glucose, hypoglycemia, is very low when it's used alone. On average, metformin lowers A1C by an average of 1.5% to 1.5%. It usually does not cause weight gain, and some people lose a small amount of weight. The most common side effects are digestive, including diarrhea, nausea, and stomach discomfort, particularly when first starting the medication. These symptoms often improve over time, especially when the dose is increased gradually. Metformin can also be used in many people with mild to moderate kidney disease, provided kidney function is monitored and dosing is adjusted appropriately. Because of its safety, effectiveness, and low cost, metformin remains the first-line therapy for most people with type 2 diabetes. Sulfonylureas are a class of oral medications that stimulate the pancreas to release more insulin. Examples include glipizide and glimepiride, and less commonly today, glyburide. These medications can lower A1C by approximately 1 to 1.5%. Because they increase insulin release regardless of current blood glucose level, they carry a higher risk of hypoglycemia, particularly in older adults and individuals with kidney impairment. Weight gain is also a common side effect. Over time, as pancreatic insulin production declines, sulfonylureas may become less effective. They are prescribed less frequently today because newer medication offer heart and kidney benefits with a lower risk of hypoglycemia. Glinides, sometimes referred to as glinides, include repaglinide and naglinide. Like sulfonylureas, they stimulate the pancreas to release insulin. However, they act more quickly and for a shorter duration. These medications are taken just before meals to help control post-meal glucose spikes. On average, they lower the A1C about 0.5 to 1.1%. On average, one advantage is flexibility. If a meal is skipped, the dose can typically be skipped as well. Similar to sulfonylureas, meglitides can cause hypoglycemia and modest weight gain. Because they require dosing with each meal and do not offer the cardiovascular and kidney benefits of newer therapies, they are used less frequently today, but still may help individuals who need targeted post-meal management. I'm sorry, these names are killer. Thiazolinides, TZDs, are medications that improve insulin sensitivity, helping muscle and fat cells respond more effectively to insulin. The most commonly used TZD today is pioglitazone, brand name Actos. These medications can lower A1C by approximately 1 to 1.5% and may provide durable glucose lowering effects. However, their use is limited by potential side effects. Weight gain and fluid restriction are common, and fluid retention can worsen heart failure in susceptible individuals. TZDs have also been associated with an increased risk of bone fractures. Because of these concerns, TZDs are generally prescribed selectively. They may be considered in individuals with insulin resistance or in those with metabolic dysfunction associated with steatotic liver disease, MSALD, where pioglitazone has shown benefit. DPP-4 inhibitors work by blocking the DPP-4 enzyme, which increases levels of incretin hormones such as the GLP-1. These hormones are released after eating and help stimulate insulin release when blood glucose rise, while also reducing glucagon levels. Common examples include Januvia and Tradjenta, as well as Onglyza and Nesina. These medications typically lower A1C by about 0.5 to 0.8%, generally do not cause weight gain, and carry a low risk of hypoglycemia when used alone. Although DPP-4 inhibitors are considered heart-safe, they have not demonstrated the same heart and kidney protection or the same A1C reduction seen with the GLP-1 receptor agonist and SGLT2 inhibitors. SGLT2 inhibitors work in the kidneys by blocking glucose reabsorption, allowing excess glucose to be excreted in the urine. This helps lower blood glucose levels through an insulin-dependent mechanism. Examples include Jardiance, Invokana, Varixa, Stelgatro, and Brenzavi. These medications typically lower A1C by about 0.5 to 1% and are often associated with modest weight loss and slight reductions in blood pressure. Large clinical trials have demonstrated that certain SGLT2 inhibitors reduce the risk of hospitalization for heart failure, lower cardiovascular risk in high-risk individuals, and slow the progression of chronic kidney disease. Because of these benefits, they are now a key treatment for option for people with type 2 diabetes who have heart failure, cardiovascular disease, or kidney disease. Common side effects include increased urination and genital yeast infections. In rare cases, SGLT2 inhibitors may cause diabetic ketoacidosis, DKA, sometimes even when blood sugar levels are not severely elevated. This requires prompt medical attention. Alpha-glucosidase inhibitors, such as Precoce, work in the digestive tract to slow the breakdown of carbohydrates into glucose by delaying carbohydrate absorption. These medications help reduce post-meal glucose spikes. On average, they lower the A1C by approximately 0.4 to 0.8%. However, gastrointestinal side effects, including gas, bloating, and diarrhea, are common and can limit tolerability. Because of their glucose-lowering effect is modest and newer medications offer additional cardiovascular and kidney benefits, alpha-glucosidase inhibitors are used less frequently today. That said, they may still be appropriate for certain individuals who primarily deal with the post-meal glucose elevation. Non-insulin injectable medications. Some diabetes medications are administered by injection rather than taken by mouth. While these therapies were once typically introduced after oral medications, they are now often considered earlier in treatment, depending on the individual's A1C level, weight goals, and heart and kidney health. These injectable options can provide powerful glucose-lowering effects and, in some cases, additional cardiovascular or kidney benefits. GLP-1 receptor antagonists and dual incretin therapies. Glucagon-like peptide 1, GLP-1, receptor antagonists mimic a natural hormone that helps regulate the blood glucose after meals. These medications increase insulin when the glucose is elevated, reduce glucagon, slow stomach emptying, and promote fullness. Examples of GLP-1 receptor antagonists include Ozempic, Rybelsus, Trulicity, Victoza. A newer medication, Mounjaro, Zepbound, act on both GIP and GLP-1 receptors and is considered a dual incretin therapy. These medications can lower A1C by an approximately 1 to 1.8%, with some dual incretin therapies achieving even greater reductions. They are also associated with meaningful weight loss. Large clinical trials have shown that certain GLP-1 receptor antagonists reduce the risk of major cardiovascular events and may slow the progression of kidney disease. The most common side effects are gastrointestinal, including nausea and vomiting. These effects are often temporary and improve as the body adjusts. Amylin analogs. Amylin is a hormone that is released alongside insulin and plays an important role in regulating blood glucose after meals. Simlin is a synthetic amylin analog that mimics this natural hormone. It works by slowing stomach emptying, reduce post-meal glucagon release from the liver, and helping promote feeling of fullness. Pramlintide is typically prescribed for individuals who are already using insulin but continue to experience elevated post-meal glucose. It can moderately lower the A1C, generally by about 0.3 to 0.7%, and may support weight management in some individuals. However, treatment requires additional injections separate from insulin and may cause side effects such as nausea. Because of these factors and the availability of newer injectable therapies with broader benefits, amylin analogs are used frequently with the current diabetes care. Insulin is a vital hormone that allows the body to use glucose for energy. In type 1 diabetes, the body produces little to no insulin. In type 2 diabetes, insulin production often declines gradually over time as the condition progresses. There are several types of insulin available. Some newer, ultra-rapid insulins such as Ficep and Lyumjev begin working within minutes. Rapid-acting insulins include insulin Lispro, Humalog, insulin Aspart, Novolog, and insulin Glucelin, Apidra, are typically taken around meal times to manage post-meal glucose rises. Short-acting insulin, Regular, is an older formulation that works more slowly, is still used in certain treatment regimens. Intermediate-acting insulin, NPH, provides longer coverage but does not last as long as moderate-acting insulins. Longer-acting insulins, including insulin glargine, Lantus, Toujeo, and insulin degludec, Tresiba, provide steady background coverage throughout the day and night. Premixed insulins combine mealtime and basal insulin in one formulation, which can simplify dosing but may limit flexibility. Insulin therapy remains one of the most effective tools for lowering blood glucose. It's available in vials, pens, pumps, and automated delivery systems. However, because it increases circulating insulin levels directly, it can raise the risk of hypoglycemia and weight gain, requiring careful monitoring and dose adjustment. Combination therapies. For many individuals living with diabetes, achieving a glucose target may require more than one medication. Combination therapy involves using two or more medications with different mechanisms of action to address multiple aspects of diabetes at the same time, such as insulin resistance, insulin deficiency, excess liver glucose production, or post-meal glucose spikes. In many cases, medications are prescribed separately. However, fixed-dose combination products are also available. These combine two medications into a single pill or injection. For example, metformin is often paired with another oral agent such as SGLT2 inhibitor or DPP4 inhibitor. Injectable combinations are also available, including basal insulin paired with a GLP-1 receptor antagonist, such as an insulin glargine lesenatide, Siliquata 100/33, or insulin dalucec liglutide, Zoltofi 100/3.6. Combination therapy can simplify treatment regimens, reduce pill burden, and improve adherence. In some cases, pairing medication may also allow for lower doses of each drug, potentially minimizing side effects. However, factors such as cost, insurance coverage, side effects, and the need for dosing flexibility should be carefully considered when selecting a new combination approach. Key considerations. Choosing the right diabetes medication involves weighing multiple factors. These may include a person's A1C level, risk of hypoglycemia, body weight, cardiovascular and kidney health, potential side effects, cost, insurance coverage, and personal preference. Treatment decisions are increasingly individualized. People living with obesity may prioritize medications that support weight loss, while those with cardiovascular or kidney disease may benefit from therapies shown to improve heart and kidney outcomes. Research continues to advance rapidly. Newer therapies targeting multiple metabolic pathways aim to improve glucose management while supporting weight loss and protecting heart and kidney health. Putting it all together, healthcare providers now have a wide range of medications available to help people manage diabetes. Each class works through a different mechanism to improve blood glucose levels and address the complex metabolic changes that occur in diabetes. Today, treatment decisions extend beyond glucose management and consider weight, hypoglycemic risk, cardiovascular and kidney health, cost, and quality of life. By understanding how these medications work and the benefits they may offer, people living with diabetes can engage in informed, meaningful conversations with their healthcare provider and collaborate on a team plan tailored to their individual needs and goals. Alex Nguyen is a graduate of the University of Colorado Skaggs School of Pharmacy and Pharmaceutical Sciences. He is an experienced pharmacist and medical reviewer with expertise in diabetes care and the medication management. Around the world in one bite. Global flavors that support steady blood glucose and a balanced plate. By Lorena Drago, MS, RDN, CDN, CD, CES. If traveling the world through food excites you, this article is for you. There's no need to dust off your passport or fasten your seatbelt. Managing blood glucose doesn't require giving up the bold, vibrant flavors of global cuisine. For those with busy lifestyles, meals that are both flavorful and nutritionally balanced are key to a long-term health and satisfaction. Drawing on traditional food practices from around the world, we can discover snacks and light meals that naturally combine fiber, lean protein, and healthy fats. A trio that supports steadier glucose levels while delivering satisfying flavor. Building a balanced foundation. The American Diabetes Association Standards of Care in Diabetes 2026 emphasize prioritizing foods rich in dietary fiber. Higher fiber intake is associated with lower all-cause mortality with people with diabetes, and research suggests that fiber may also reduce the risk of developing type 2 diabetes. Fiber-rich foods include raspberries, beans, peas, lentils, chia seeds, avocados, and oats, as well as a wide variety of other fruits and vegetables and whole grains. When reading the nutrition facts label, aim for foods that provide at least 3 grams of fiber per serving, and ideally 5 grams or more when possible. When choosing protein, select lean cuts of poultry, fish, or meat. Trimming visible fat when appropriate. Plant-based options such as beans, lentils, tofu, and edamame can also contribute both protein and fiber. Healthy fats. From foods like avocados, olives, nuts, seeds, and extra virgin olive oil or avocado oil, enhance flavor and improve satiety, feelings of fullness. Replacing saturated fats with unsaturated fats can improve cholesterol levels and reduce cardiovascular risk in people with diabetes. To help you explore these global flavors with confidence, we've gathered insights from leading registered dietitians who demonstrate how traditional staples can be adapted and enjoyed in a diabetes-friendly kitchen. India, savory chickpea pancakes, pudla, Vandana Sheath, RDN, CD, CES, FAND, author of My Indian Table, Quick and Tasty Vegetarian Recipes, highlights pudla, also known as chila, a savory pancake made from chickpea flour, besan. Naturally rich in plant-based protein and fiber, this traditional dish helps slow digestion and support steadier blood glucose levels. To make it even more blood glucose friendly and satisfying, she suggests a non-traditional boost, adding tofu to the batter. This simple addition increases protein along with iron, magnesium, and folate without altering the familiar flavor or texture. These versatile pancakes can be served with green chutney, plain yogurt, such as Greek yogurt, and fresh vegetables, or fold into a wrap for a portable, convenient snack. Haiti, cassava and spicy peanut butter. Cassav ak mamba. Charlie Saint Laurent. Beaujolais. MSRD LDN. Highlights a centuries-old Haitian recipe staple. Cassava, also known as yuca, a root vegetable that originated in South America and is now grown worldwide, is widely used in Haitian and Latin American cuisines. To prepare cassava, raw cassava is grated, pressed, dried, and formed into a thin, crisp flatbread. It's often flavored with coconut and warm spices such as nutmeg or allspice. The bread is traditionally paired with mamba, a spicy Haitian peanut butter that may include scotch bonnet pepper or other seasonings. This combination supports blood glucose balancing by pairing a carbohydrate source, which may provide some resistant starch, depending on preparation, with the protein and heart-healthy unsaturated fats found in peanut butter. The addition of fat and protein can help slow digestion and promote satiety. While the distinctive spices in Haitian mamba reflect its cultural roots, Beaujour notes that natural peanut butter or other nut and seed butters, such as almond or sunflower seed butter, can be used as a convenient substitution for a quick, satisfying meal or snack. Nigeria, air-fried plantain and beef suya. Uma Collins, MSRD/LD, CSSD, CPT, a sports dietitian with well-rooted health and nutrition, recommends pairing plantain with beef suya, a beloved Nigerian street food. This flavorful combination provides carbohydrates, lean protein, and fiber. Callens notes that the plantains, particularly when less ripe, contain resistant starch, which supports gut health and may help moderate post-meal blood glucose response. For a lighter, convenient version of traditional dodo, fried plantain, she suggests using an air fryer to achieve crispness with less added fat. Beef suya is typically made with thinly sliced beef sirloin marinated in suya, also called yaji, a spice blend that often includes ground peanuts, cayenne or chili powder, ginger, garlic, onion powder, and other West African spices. Grilled for deep, savory flavor, it's commonly served with sliced cucumbers, tomatoes, and red onions for freshness and crunch. Israel, savory cottage cheese bowl. Ileana Shadeki, MSRDN, an Israel-based dietitian, highlights the Israeli savory cottage cheese bowl, a Mez-inspired snack that can be assembled in under 5 minutes. Cottage cheese is topped with finely chopped cucumber and tomato, a drizzle of extra virgin olive oil, and a sprinkle of za'atar, a fragrant blend that often includes dried thyme, oregano, marjoram, toasted sesame seeds, and sumac. Together, these ingredients offer three key nutritional pillars: protein for satiety, muscle health, fiber from vegetables and sesame seeds to support steadier post-meal glucose levels, and heart-healthy unsaturated fats from olive oil. In Israel, cottage cheese is commonly eaten throughout the day as a mid-morning or afternoon snack or as a light meal. This savory preparation reflects the Mediterranean emphasis on fresh, minimally processed foods and easy to adapt based on season and taste. She suggests adding vegetables such as bell peppers, scallions, carrots, or red onions for additional color, texture, and fiber. Japan. Chilled tofu. Hayakako and edamame. Fumi Hisashi, PhD, RD, professor of the Kagawa Nutrition University, highlights two convenient plant-based protein staples: chilled tofu and edamame. Chilled tofu, or hayakako, requires minimal preparation. Silken tofu is typically served on cold and topped with soy sauce. Choose reduced sodium varieties to keep sodium levels in check. Sliced green onions, dried bonito flakes, and freshly grated ginger for aroma and depth. For additional protein and fiber, Dr. Hashi suggests pairing tofu with natto, fermented soybeans. Because tofu has a mild flavor, it adapts easily across cuisines and can be prepared Mediterranean style with sliced tomatoes, a splash of balsamic vinegar, and extra virgin olive oil, similar to a Caprese-inspired dish. Edamame, available fresh or frozen, makes an easy grab-and-go snack. Naturally rich in both protein and fiber, it supports satiety and steady blood glucose levels. These soy-based options can also be seasoned with flavors inspired by Korean cuisine, such as sesame oil, garlic, or chili flakes. Czech Republic, Open Face Sandwiches. Klebicki. Elizabeth Shaw, MS, RDN, CPT, highlights Klebicki, a traditional Czech open-faced sandwich that gained popularity in the early 90s when a Prague delicatessen near the National Theater began serving them to theatergoers. Historically prepared on a white soft bread, Shaw suggests using whole grain rye bread as a more glucose-friendly base. Whole grains provide additional fiber which can support steadier glucose levels. Toppings such as avocado, hard-boiled eggs, or smoked salmon, or skyr, a thick, creamy Icelandic cultured dairy product, contribute protein and healthy fats. Avocado adds fiber while salmon provides heart-healthy omega-3 fatty acids. These versatile sandwiches can be enjoyed throughout the day. Morning versions may feature the skyr and eggs, while afternoon variations might include cream cheese, tomatoes, cucumbers, or fresh herbs for additional flavor, and texture. Korea. Kimbap. When asked to share a Korean snack suitable for people with diabetes, Jennifer Tao, MS, RDN, CDN, CDC, ES, immediately thought of kimbap. It can be eaten at almost any time of day, though not typically at breakfast, and it's ideal as a grab-and-go option for hiking, picnics, or children, she explains. Kimbap is made with roasted seaweed sheets filled with seasoned short grain rice and colorful assortments of ingredients, such as julienne carrots, blanched spinach, egg and proteins like beef, ham, or seafood. The roll is brushed lightly with sesame oil, sliced into bite-sized pieces, and often sprinkled with toasted sesame seeds. To make kimbap more balanced, glucose balanced, Tao suggests using a thinner layer of rice and increasing the proportion of non-starchy vegetables and lean protein. This simple adjustment maintains traditional flavor while moderating the overall carbohydrate content. Peru. Casa Limina is a classic Peruvian cold appetizer often served at lunch or dinner. It features layers of seasoned mashed yellow potatoes on the top and bottom, filled with a savory mix of chicken or tuna and creamy avocado in the center. The dish is traditionally garnished with sliced hard-boiled egg and black olives for added flavor and presentation. Nutritionally, Casa offers a balanced combination of carbohydrates, protein, and healthy fats. The potatoes provide carbohydrates along with potassium and vitamin C, while the avocado contributes heart-healthy unsaturated fats and dietary fiber. Chicken or tuna adds protein to support satiety and steady energy levels. For a more blood glucose-friendly approach, consider keeping portions moderate and increasing the proportion of protein in avocado relative to the potato layer. Adding extra vegetables, such as diced peppers or greens alongside the filling can also enhance fiber and nutrition density while preserving the dish's traditional appeal. A world of flavor. There you have it. A journey through the global flavors that celebrate plant and animal proteins, whole grains, nuts, dairy, and vibrant vegetables. These dishes honor cultural tradition while supporting balanced glucose, one delicious bite at a time. Lorena Drago is a registered dietitian, nutritionist, and certified diabetes care and educational specialist. She specializes in the multicultural aspects of diabetes self-management education. Mocktails and Diabetes, A Smarter Way to Sip, by Amy Campbell, MS, RD, LDN, CDC, ES. Mocktails, alcohol-free versions of classic cocktails, are having a moment. These zero-alcohol drinks make it easy to take part in social occasions without drinking. But if you have diabetes, do you need to avoid alcohol together? And if you choose or need to skip it, are mocktails a better option? Read on to learn more. Alcohol and Diabetes. The decision to drink alcohol isn't one to take lightly, especially if you have diabetes. Many factors can affect whether alcohol is safe for you, including medications, blood glucose patterns, and overall health. In general, many people with diabetes can choose to drink alcohol in moderation if they wish. But it's always a good idea to talk with your healthcare provider about what's appropriate for your individual situation. Possible benefits and caveats. The American Diabetes Association notes that some studies have linked moderate alcohol intake with certain potential benefits, including a lower risk of heart disease for moderate drinkers only. Improvements in blood glucose levels. A modest reduction in A1C, a measure of glucose levels over the previous 2 to 3 months. However, these findings are based largely on observational research and don't mean that alcohol directly improves health. More recent guidance from the U.S. Center of Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, emphasizes that even moderate drinking may carry health risks compared with not drinking at all, and that no one should start drinking for potential health benefits. So while people may notice moderate glucose-related effects, the overall picture is more nuanced than it once seemed. Risks to keep in mind. Alcohol can also pose significant risks, including hypoglycemia, low blood sugar, especially if you take insulin or type of diabetes medication called the sulfonylurea, weight gain due to extra calories, potential worsening of certain health conditions such as high blood pressure and some diabetes-related complications, particularly with heavy drinking. Alcohol can also make it harder to recognize the symptoms of low blood sugar, which can increase the risk of severe hypoglycemia. Who should not drink? According to the CDC, some people should not drink alcohol at all. This includes individuals who are younger than 21, pregnant or planning to become pregnant, taking medications that interact with alcohol, unable to control how much they drink or who they are recovering or who are recovering from alcohol use disorder. In addition, alcohol should never be used during driving or operating machinery. Excessive alcohol use is linked to a wide range of health problems, including heart disease, stroke, liver disease, digestive issues, and several types of cancer, mental health concerns, social problems, and alcohol dependence. What counts as moderation? For many people with well-controlled diabetes, moderate alcohol use can be safe when approached thoughtfully. Moderation is generally defined as no more than 2 drinks per day for men, no more than 1 drink per day for women. A standard drink is defined as a 12-ounce beer, 5 ounces of wine, 1.5 ounce of distilled spirits, hard liquor. Enter the mocktail. Alcohol use has long been common in the United States, with most adults reporting that they have consumed alcohol at some point in their lives. But the landscape is shifting. More people are choosing to cut back on alcohol or take breaks from drinking altogether. Whether for health reasons, better sleep, or overall well-being, movements like Dry January, which began in the United Kingdom, have helped spark broader interest in alcohol-free living in the United States as well. At the same time, sober curious movements have gained momentum, especially among younger adults. Many people are rethinking their relationship with alcohol and looking for alternatives that still feel social and celebratory. With this growing interest in the mindful drinking, mocktails are having a moment. While alcohol-free beers and wines have been around for years, mocktails, often made with sparkling water, fruits, herbs, and alcohol-free spirits, have taken center stage. These drinks offer a way to socialize, celebrate, and enjoy a festive flavor without the effects of alcohol. What are mocktails? Mocktails aren't exactly new. Merriam-Webster notes that the word mocktail first appeared in print in the early 1900s, and the Shirley Temple, introduced in the 1930s, is often cited as one of the earliest well-known examples. Classic favorites like Virgin Pina Coladas, Virgin Daiquiris, and Roy Rogers drinks have been around for decades. A mocktail, also called a zero-proof or no-proof or spirit-free drink, offers the same types of flavors and ingredients found in traditional cocktails, just without the alcohol. Many modern versions feature premium sparkling water, fruit, fresh herbs and spices, and shrubs, tangy syrups made from the fruit, sugar, vineyard, and aromatics. A growing number of companies now produce non-alcoholic spirits designed to mix the mocktails, mimicking the flavor profiles of gin, whiskey, rum, and other liquors. Popular brands include Seedlip, Ritual Zero Proof, Free Spirits, makers of the spirit of gin, and Sear Hill. Mocktails are also showing up more frequently on restaurants and bar menus. Even major beverage brands have entered the space. For example, Ocean Spray offers a line of mocktail-inspired drinks and flavors like Cranberry Peach Bellini, Cranberry Sangria, and Tropical Citrus Paradise. Are mocktails healthy for people with diabetes? Whether you call them mocktails or zero-proof drinks, these beverages can be appealing, especially if you choose not to drink alcohol. But alcohol-free doesn't automatically mean healthy, and it certainly doesn't always mean low in calories or carbohydrates. Mocktail nutrition, what's really in your glass? Mocktails can vary widely in their calorie and carbohydrate content, depending on the ingredients used. Here's a look at what you might find in a typical serving. Curious Elixir number 2, 11.5 ounces, 40 calories, 9 grams carbohydrate, 7 grams of sugar, 60 milligrams of sodium. This drink is made with ingredients such as pineapple and orange juice concentrates, lime extract, ginger, chili pepper extracts, smoked sea salt, herbs, and carbonated water. Ocean Spray Cranberry Sangria, 8 ounces, 80 calories, 21 carbohydrates, 19 grams sugar, 45 milligrams sodium. This mocktail-style beverage blends several fruit juices, including grape, pineapple, orange, and pineapple, along with added sugar, natural flavors, and spices. Peach Bellini, 8 ounces, approximately 90 to 120 calories, 20 to 30 carbohydrate, 20 to 30 sugar, 0 to 40 milligrams sodium. Depending on the recipe or product, this drink may include peach nectar, sparkling apple cider or ginger ale, and sometimes fresh fruit. How mocktails can affect blood sugar. Even though these drinks are alcohol-free and often feel more grown-up than soda or juice, they're not necessarily low in calories or carbohydrates. Many mocktails are made with fruit juices, simple syrup, sweetened sparkling beverages, or other mixers that can quickly add up in carbs. As a result, they can raise blood sugar, blood glucose levels, sometimes more than you expect. Carb-free mocktails. Fortunately, you can still enjoy a mocktail if you choose. You just need to pick your ingredients carefully. Some alcohol-free spirits, such as Seedlip Grove 42 and Seedlip Spice 94, are calorie and sugar-free, and the company's website offers a variety of mocktail recipes. Keep in mind, however, that these recipes include mixers that contain carbohydrates such as regular ginger ale, tonic water, swapping in sugar-free versions that can help the lower count. The bottom line on mocktails. Mocktails can be a fun, flavorful way to take part in social events, whether you're cutting back on alcohol or avoiding it altogether. Just keep an eye on ingredients, which portion sizes, especially if you're watching your carbohydrate intake. With a little planning, you can enjoy festive, alcohol-free drinks that fit into your diabetes plan. That is all we have time for today. I'm Sarah from the Talking Information Center. Thank you for listening today.
This is your Better Business Bureau with our tip of the week. When your phone rings these days, you can't always believe caller ID. Technology makes it easy for scammers to fake caller ID information. If someone calls out of the blue, asking for money or personal information, hang up. If you think the caller might be telling the truth, call back to a number you know is genuine. It's best to not answer calls from unknown numbers. If you do answer the phone and the caller asks you to hit a button to stop getting the calls, you should just hang up. Scammers often use this trick to identify potential targets. Never give out personal information such as account numbers, social security numbers, mother's maiden name, passwords, or other identifying information in response to unexpected calls. Talk to your phone company about call blocking tools that may be available, and check into apps that you can download to your mobile device. Remember to call BBB if you suspect a scam or want to report a scam, even if you don't lose money. Your scam report will help prevent additional victims. Our toll-free number is 1-866-566-9222.
Would you like to hear news from Blackstone Valley and Webster that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune into Audio Journal every Thursday at 5 p.m.